Morgan let Stormy have his head as they trotted along the rocky road toward the Flying Sea. The Crowder boy either hadn't known much or was too smart to tell them anything of any use. Frank figured it was the former. None of the Crowders he'd met or heard about had too much going for them in the way of brains. If Tom Crowder wouldn't talk to him, he'd speak with the whole family one by one. They'd either talk or get mad and fight. Either way, he'd find out what he needed to know. While some men might figure it was better to use a little more stealth in this sort of matter, taking more time to gather useful information without tipping too much of their hand, Morgan preferred to handle things in a more direct manner. If he suspected someone of a misdeed, he'd much rather confront them about their behavior than sneak around hoping they would repent. He sought information the same way he entered a battle. Ride in shooting on pure gut instinct and sort out the particulars after the smoke cleared. Frank Morgan was about as sophisticated in that regard as a herd bull in a china shop. The shadows were getting long by the time Frank and Tyler rode up to the Crowder homestead. A half a dozen outbuildings sat squat and unused in the eerie evening light. A flock of half a dozen hens came squawking out to meet them from behind a large pecan tree as they neared the ranch house. Morgan watched for movement in the windows. With all the racket the chickens were making, someone sure had to know they were here.
Did you know the Crowders when you were here before?
Nope. It must have come after I moved on. This place used to belong to an old German by the name of Johns. He used to let me and Luke come turkey hunting out here with my pa's old muzzle-loading scatter gun.
The ranch house was a simple two-story cedar lap with a wraparound porch and awning. Harsh sun from too many summers had faded the white paint to a dull gray. Two gabled windows looked out on a weedy front yard. The window to the left was open, and a yellow curtain trailed out on a slight breeze. The other one was broken. An open window could be cause for some alarm, but when no shot came, and no movement appeared at the window or the door, Morgan relaxed. Wolf plodded alongside, itching to chase the clucking birds, but staying in place on Frank's command.
I don't guess anyone's home.
A brown and white milk cow blinked at them from a log corral beside a sun-bleached timber barn. She lowed forlornly and stood chewing her cud.
Somebody's gotta come home and milk that cow.
Frank nodded toward the barn as he dismounted and tied Stormy to a cedar rail. He used a quick-relief horse's thief knot, just in case he needed to beat a hasty retreat.
We'll just wait until they do.
The front door suddenly creaked open, and both men turned at once, hands on their pistols. Standing at the threshold, staring right through them as if they weren't there, was a woman about Frank's age. She had straight, straw-colored hair, and a face that seemed locked in an expressionless gaze, as if she were lost and trying to find some distant horizon. Morgan tipped his hat.
Frank Morgan, ma'am. This is Tyler Beaumont, Texas Ranger. Wonder if we could talk with you a little.
The woman continued her distant vigil without acknowledging the visitors. She had an almost indiscernible tick that made her look as if she was gently shaking her head in quiet disagreement with something. Her hands trailed down beside her blue skirt, unmoving.
Ma'am, are you all right?
She's fine.
A young man who looked to be in his early 20s came around the corner of the house. The sleeves of his white shirt were rolled up and he carried an axe. He had blonde hair like the woman, though his was more bleached from working in the sun.
Can I help you with something?
He wore no gun, but held the axe in front of him like he might use it if pressed. He shared the same nose as Tom Crowder, but the rest of his features looked like the woman at the door.
Name's Morgan. We're looking for Mr. Crowder.
He's not here.
You mind if we wait? I'm a Texas Ranger. We're looking into Judge Monfort's kidnapping.
Don't know when he'll be back, but you can suit yourself. Sorry about my mother. She hasn't been right since the accident. I'm Jared Crowder.
The man lowered the axe. The nose was definitely the only thing Tom and Jared had in common. Where the prisoner was snotty and indifferent, his blonde-haired older brother was polite and direct. If he had anything to hide, he was doing a good job of it.
You're welcome to come in and wait in the parlor. I need to get Mama inside and get her fed before Pa gets home. She doesn't need as good for him.
Jared gently shooed his mother away from the door and back into the house.
Your brother's here, or are you two alone?
No, sir, just me and her. I was splitting wood out back when you came up. Those fool chickens are always clucking on about something. Heck, a big green grasshopper can get them all riled up, so we usually pay him no mind. Go ahead and have a seat. I need to finish taking care of my ma's supper. She'll just sit in her chair there while I get it. She don't really like to eat in the kitchen. It upsets her. I promise she won't bother you.
We'll be fine, son. You do what you need to do.
A single oil lamp lit the room. Frank took a seat in one of the leather chairs across from the window and Mrs. Crowder. Her gaze drilled through him and the wall behind him as surely as a bullet. She hummed a quiet tune in soft time to the tick of her head. Neither Morgan or Beaumont spoke. It felt rude around the woman. Frank wondered how long she'd been like this. He noticed a dirty spoon hiding among the dust under the edge of the sofa. It had likely been there quite a while. Jared came in with a wooden tray. There was a plate of scrambled eggs, a tall glass of buttermilk, and 2 cups of coffee.
I figured you'd rather have coffee instead of milk. There was only enough milk for Mama anyhow.
He set down the tray and passed out the coffee.
You figured right on that account, Mr. Crowder. I could use a good cup of coffee.
Many thanks.
She likes eggs the best. She can't tell us so, but she doesn't spit them back out like she does the mush Paul tries to feed her.
Jared took a seat beside his mother and spooned a bit of egg into the gaunt woman's mouth. She chewed methodically and swallowed. Her mouth hung open as if she wanted more. He gave her another small bite and looked up at the two men.
I put butter in it, same way she used to fix mine. Sometimes I think I can even see her smile.
You said she had an accident?
Rattlesnake spooked a team and it got away from my paw a little over 2 years ago. He couldn't stop him. The wagon flipped and threw him. Paul got his eye knocked out and the wagon rolled over Mama's head. She wandered around for 2 days before I tracked her down about 5 miles from here.
Jared gave her another bite of eggs and wiped the corners of her mouth with a cloth he'd kept tucked in his belt.
Paul says she'll come around any time now, but I don't think so.
Yeah, you never know about these things. I was mighty near death myself a while back. Your pa mentioned Judge Monfer lately?
Not too much. I know they don't see eye to eye, if that's what you mean.
Jared finished feeding his mother and set the tray on a squat wooden table at the end of the couch. He handed the poor woman the glass of buttermilk and helped her press it to her lips, careful not to give it to her too fast.
My pa is capable of about anything, and to tell you the honest truth, I don't think too much of him. I wouldn't even stay around here if it wasn't for my mother.
Jared set the rest of the buttermilk on the tray and wiped his mother's face again.
Well, the judge has a daughter and wife who are worried sick about him right now.
Oh, worried!
Both Morgan and Beaumont jumped at the sudden outburst. Jared, apparently used to such things, held his mother's hand and stroked her arm to try and soothe her.
Sometimes she mimics what folks are saying. Sorry if it startled you.
It's all right. We best be going now anyhow. Our work's cut out for us finding the judge. We owe it to his wife and daughter to find out what's happened.
Worried! Judges, women! Women worried! Watch women! Watch women!
She's not mimicking anyone now.
She must have heard Pa talking to Pete and Pony earlier. Sometimes he talks to her, not even giving a thought that she might understand his words.
Morgan moved his chair closer so he could look the blank-faced woman in the eye. He gently brushed a lock of her hair out of her face and smiled. If she noticed he was there in front of her, she gave no sign of it.
Do you want to tell us something, Mrs. Crowder?
She sat mutely, blinking and staring into space.
She's never done this before. I don't know what she's heard, but if I was you, I'd go check on those women folk.
I wish you all the best with all you have to do here. You're a fine son to your mother. Sad to say, it's a rare quality these days.
You be careful, Mr. Morgan, Ranger Beaumont. I told you, my pa's capable of just about anything, and my brothers are 10 times worse than he is.
Tyler, I want you to do me a favor.
I know what you're gonna say. If you ever get like that pitiful woman, you want me to shoot you.
You didn't miss by much. I'd hate for you to have to live with having shot me. I was thinking you could stuff my vest pockets with bacon, send me out into the Rocky Mountains so I could make my peace with the grizzlies and panthers. They could do all the dirty work for you.
Grizzly bears?
Be a damn sight better than living like her.
I'll do it on one condition.
What's that?
If the situation is reversed, I'd just as soon you shot me. I'm not too partial to being ate up by grizzly bears.
Glad to, kid. We got us a deal.
It was nearing sunset by the time they had the clock tower of the Weatherford Courthouse in view. Frank's gut was knotted with worry. He wanted to get to Mercy and Victoria before it got too dark. There were too many folks in town for a kidnapping to be successful during the daylight hours. But once the sun went down, it would be an easy matter, particularly if the sheriff could be counted on to look the other way. Beaumont kept his stout bay pointed toward the center of town. It was easy to see the tough little ranger was sweet on Victoria. He wasn't about to let anything happen to her. They slowed the horses to a trot down the long hill coming into town from the north. Beaumont pulled his bay to a sliding stop in front of Harwood's blacksmith shop. Morgan followed suit and shot him a questioning look. The ranger nodded at a piebald paint mare with flop ears and a huge hammerhead that was tied to a trough next to the smoky building. The mare had a rear leg cocked up, and it looked like she'd thrown a shoe.
Deputy Grant's horse.
The rotund deputy came out of the open double doors a moment later. He was gnawing on a chunk of hot bread the size of his fist, and melted butter dripped down his series of chins. His face fell when he saw Morgan, and his mouth hung open.
Hey, Frank. My horse needs a new shoe. I had to beg Jesse to stay late and fix it.
Grant, have you seen the sheriff around today?
Oh, not too much. Danged old Jesse's up the price of a shoeing by 25 cents. He gave me some fool story about how the price of shoeing is pegged to 5 times the price of a haircut, and since the barber on Main just went up a nickel, he's got to go up too. I was pretty honked. I don't mind telling you. I expect he gave me this here piece of hot bread to shut me up.
Huh. Well, fancy that.
Bob, listen here. I need to know when you last saw Rance Whitehead.
Well, he's been away a lot lately. I saw him for just a minute about, an hour ago. He asked me to go by and check on the Montfors and make certain they were home and safe.
Are they?
Well, Mercy was there. She says she doesn't plan to go anywhere else this evening.
Does the sheriff know that?
Told him so myself.
What about Victoria?
Well, her mama said she was out for an evening buggy ride with Reed Whitehead, the sheriff's boy.
Did she say where they were going?
Let's see. Oh, yeah. Diamond Creek. They were heading out of town a ways toward Diamond Creek. Don't seem proper them being alone and all, but I reckon she ain't a spring chicken, and he is a sheriff's son.
Morgan and Beaumont left Deputy Grant to finish his hunk of buttered bread and rode on toward the center of town. The sun was just below the brushy line of oaks toward Palo Pinto, and a cool wind was beginning to blow.
Diamond Creek is southwest of town toward the river. Mercy's house is that way. I'm the kind of man who likes to do things myself, that's certain. But I don't see how we can get this done without splitting up.
Me neither.
I haven't been able to figure out for certain if she's my own flesh and blood, but the odds are damn sure in favor of it. I got a son, but the thought of having a daughter sobers me down to my boot soles. There's nobody I'd trust more than you to make sure she's safe.
I'll do my best.
Do what it takes, Tyler. That's what I'm expecting of you. Just do what it takes and bring her back.
Diamond Creek was a tiny, spring-fed stream that joined the Brazos River. Diamond Creek bubbled along over a polished bed of gravel, making it one of the few clearwater streams in North Texas. Bordered on both sides by a row of towering pecan trees, so tall their canopies touched across the water in a sort of an arch, the creek ran through a shadowed tunnel. In summer, when the pecans were covered in leaves, it was a favorite spot for young couples to slip away and spend some time out from under the watchful eye of the nosy but well-intentioned parents and clergy of Parker County. Victoria had been surprised when Reed had asked her to accompany him to such a place. He'd shown up dressed more like a cowboy than someone reading law. She'd never seen him in any other kind of hat but a bowler, and the broad-brimmed Stetson made her smile when she saw it. He'd been nervous and behaving strangely, stepping on his words and glancing up and down the road as if he didn't want anyone to see him doing the asking. She was too flattered to say no. No matter what her father thought of him, Reed Whitehead had always been nice enough. She was afraid, though, that he thought of her in a way far different than she felt about him. A week ago, she might have settled for a life with Reed. He wanted to be an attorney and was reading law with one of the Hansen brothers. His future in Parker County was set. Then Tyler Beaumont had ridden in with her mother's old flame. She'd taken one look at the Texas Ranger's broad shoulders and pale eyes and decided that that was the man she wanted to spend her life beside. Beaumont appeared to share her feelings. Though he'd not said as much, a woman could tell such things. Sitting on the bouncing buggy beside Reed Whitehead, Victoria decided it was an incredible mistake to lead him on by going with him to Diamond Creek. She had to tell him how she really felt before they got there. Reed jingled the reins of the gray mare to keep her speed up. When he turned to look at her, his eyes had a funny glow she'd not noticed before. He'd grown quieter, hardly ever looking in her direction. It was almost as if she wasn't there with him at all. Perhaps he sensed she was about to give him some hard news. The sun was dipping below the horizon, and a cool wind whispered through the cedars and live oaks along the winding wagon road that led out of town toward the Brazos River. Victoria pulled her cream-colored woolen shawl up around her shoulders. This was her favorite time of day. The fresh scent of the green grass and succulent plants that grew along the spring-fed creek drifted up on the evening breeze. They were close.
Reed, I have something I need to talk to you about.
Yeah, don't worry, sweetheart. I've got something I need to say to you, too.
Really, Reed, I think you should just pull over.
You do you? Why's that?
I told you, I need to talk to you and I want your full attention. Reed, I'm asking you to stop the horse now.
I can't. I've got a surprise for you up here in the trees.
Oh, Reed, listen to me. Really, I don't want to hurt you, but I think you need to let me talk to you before we go any further.
Whitehead leaned back against the heavy leather reins to slow the gray mare. The buggy seat was on leaf springs and rocked back and forth for a few seconds, even after the wagon came to a standstill. He turned abruptly in the seat to face her.
Let me tell you something. You think this, you think that. I'll save us all some trouble and tell you what I think. I think you should shut the hell up.
Reed!
Whitehead sent a heavy right fist crashing against the side of her face. Her eyes slammed shut and 1,000 pinpoints of yellow light exploded inside her head. She'd never in her life felt such searing pain. For a moment, she thought she might throw up. Then everything went black. She never even had time to scream. The jingle of bit and harness as the gray mare nosed at the green buds on a pecan branch jarred Victoria out of a sickening unconsciousness. She was on the ground, leaning against a buggy wheel. Her left ear felt like it was on fire. When she tried to move her jaw, she thought she might understand what it would feel like to be shot in the head. Male voices drifted over from the other side of the buggy, nearest the gurgling creek. One of the voices belonged to Reed Whitehead. She couldn't place the others, but she thought she'd heard at least one of them before. She cast her eyes back and forth without moving her head, partially so no one would know she was awake, but mostly because moving hurt so badly. She considered trying to make a run for it. She could outmaneuver the gray mare towing the buggy through the thick tangle of trees, but she heard other horses snorting and pawing over by the voices. With her head pounding like it was, she wasn't sure she'd even be able to walk, let alone outrun a man on horseback. This whole situation was beyond her imagination. She racked her brain, trying to figure out what had caused Reed to go so crazy. She didn't have to wonder about it long.
I see you're still among the living. I'll say this for you. You're a tough little princess. Most women I know would have been boo-hooing their guts out by now. It's only a matter of time, though. I suppose before long you'll be shedding a tear or two. Old Pete here says he's got a little score to settle with you.
A dark, oafish man with an ugly purple bruise over an equally ugly face stood over her and held up a bandaged hand. It was missing two of its fingers.
You remember me, little princess? You and I need to have a little talk about the way you treated me the last time we met.
What have you done with my father? What have you got to do with all this, Reed Whitehead?
You know, over the last 2 years, you and I have spent a lot of time together. All the while, I listened to everything you wanted to talk about. All the while, I did the things you wanted to do. I thought you would at least have the decency to see it through to the end. Now, my father said you were just leading me on. He told me about the damn ranger runt you're so sweet on lately.
You don't know what you're talking about.
My father said you were nothing but a worthless little tease, just like your mother used to be. First, I didn't believe him. But I know now.
You watch your mouth, Reed. I've never treated you anything but proper. And up to now, you've always returned the favor. I don't understand what's gotten into you to get involved with men like this. They have my father, for heaven's sake.
Reed's fist caught her low in the gut and drove the wind from her lungs. Reed grabbed at her shoulder with his left hand while he hit her again with his right. She fell to her knees and fought for air, opening her mouth like a fish flopped up on the bank. The sleeve and half her blouse had ripped away, leaving her exposed, but she was too stunned and weak to do anything about it. When Victoria caught her breath, she tried to cover herself with her arms. She looked up to see Reed holding the torn remnant of white cloth to his nose, smelling it. Pete Crowder and another man with a long red beard and a soot-smudged face stood to the side of Whitehead.
Give us a minute or two alone, boys. I have a few important matters to finish up with our little princess here.
Suit yourself. My pa said to bring her. He didn't say not to touch her on the way. I don't mind waiting my turn. That okay with you, Kelly?
I ain't the particular sort.
Pete said you were dangerous. He said he had to bring Kelly along so you wouldn't kill us all.
Reed gave her a swift boot in the ribs that flipped her over and sent her into a gasping, coughing fit. She felt his presence as he knelt down beside her, even doubled her fist to hit him, but couldn't get enough air to move her arms. Cruel hand grabbed her shoulders, pushing, pinning her to the ground. She gave up trying to keep her chest covered and put all her efforts into the struggle. In the end, Reed was too strong for her and banged her head against an exposed root to calm her down. With the other men standing by and waiting their turn, she knew it was foolish to fight. She could not win, but that really didn't matter. She didn't have it inside her to give up. Reed Whitehead and the others might have their way with her dead body, but that would be all they would get. Reed tugged at the hem of her skirt, ripping the outer layer away. She pushed at his hand and sank her teeth into the flesh along his upper arm, tasting blood. He jerked back to hit her in the face again. She fell back, unable to see clearly enough to know what was going on around her anymore. She could feel the cool breeze on her exposed skin, but her arms wouldn't work anymore.
Weak bitch.
She heard the men laugh at her pain. She saw a shadow looming over her and knew it was Reed. Then, the pounding in her head turned into hoofbeats. Pete Crowder turned from his cheering to catch a .44 slug straight through the bridge of his nose. The red-bearded outlaw spun in time to see Tyler Beaumont shoot his partner. He clawed for his gun. But the ranger shot him twice in the chest. Men who would stand by and cheer while anyone treated a woman like this didn't deserve any more warning than the click of a hammer coming back on the pistol. The ranger breasted the rise on the near side of the creek and splashed his horse across it without pausing to watch the dead men hit the ground. He slid off the bay before it came to a complete stop, landing only a few feet from a dismayed Reed Whitehead, who knelt over a badly injured Victoria. The sight of what they'd done to her, and what they were about to do, sent a lightning bolt of fury through the young lawman's body. He'd never in his life felt as ready to kill as he did at that very moment. Two quick strides brought the lawman close enough to administer a brutal kick to the kneeling man's ribs. The blow sent him flying off the beleaguered girl and nearly caused Beaumont to lose his footing. Several of Whitehead's ribs snapped from the impact of the ranger's boot. Whitehead was no slouch when it came to fighting. His father had seen to that.
Beaumont, you son of a bitch! You ruined everything!
Victoria looked up, tears in her eyes. She was dazed and frightened, like a wounded child. Beaumont's anger burned as she tried to cover herself where half her clothing was ripped away. The pitiful look sent a shock of rage through the ranger's veins. Whitehead threw a strong right, but Beaumont deflected it, letting it slide off his jaw without much effect. It didn't matter what the man did now. Nothing was going to stop Tyler Beaumont from what he was about to do. Justice had to be done. Whitehead groped for the pistol at his side. Before he could bring it up, Beaumont knocked it to the ground.
Uh-uh. You're not going to get off that easy. I could have shot you when I rode up.
Beaumont drew Whitehead to him and gave him a fierce headbutt to the nose with his forehead.
No, sir. What you need is an ass whipping.
Beaumont's right fist slammed into Whitehead's already shattered nose.
and I'm just proud to be the one to give it to you.
Beaumont walked past another feeble punch and grabbed Whitehead by the collar. Yanking him forward, he drove a powerful knee into the other man's groin, then again into his stomach. When Whitehead collapsed to his knees, Beaumont grabbed him by the back of his shirt and began to bash his face into the thick oak hub on the buggy wheel.
I thought you were going to be my real competition for her.
Beaumont had turned the now lolling man into a limp, bloody mess of bone and torn flesh. Reed's pistol lay on the ground in front of him, only inches from his shredded face.
Shooting's too quick for you.
Beaumont planted a boot on Whitehead's blood-covered cheek. The ranger picked up the revolver and stuck it into his waistband. He shrugged off his jacket and knelt down to cover Victoria. She tried to look around, but he gently turned her face away from her dead attackers and the wounded Whitehead. She shook her head and looked anyway. Her fine mouth was set in a grim line.
I'll be fine. I'd have gladly killed them myself if I could have. Do you think he'll live?
I'm sorry to say it, but I believe he will for the time being. He won't be bounding around hurting any more women, though. I aim to see him hang for this, and anything else he might have done.
He never... I mean, you stopped him before. Oh, Tyler!
You're one tough lady. You know that?
You think so?
That I do. You're the spitting image of your father.
You didn't get here until after my father was kidnapped. Have you ever met him before?
Your papa's a famous judge, darling. I'm a Texas Ranger. I know him by reputation, that's all. And he's got a reputation for being one tough customer.
When you were fighting, I heard you say you thought Reed might be your competition. What'd you mean by that?
Let's get you home, Miss Monfer.
It was completely dark now. Half a moon hung in the night sky. But the bodies of Pete Crowder and his red-bearded companion were barely visible in the shadows of the huge pecan trees. Beaumont helped Victoria up into the buggy and handed her the reins.
I need to get some rope for my saddle and tie up Whitehead. Then I'll put my horse behind us and drive you back to town. Frank's there now looking after your mama.
They were sweet on each other years ago, weren't they?
Well, I suppose that's true, but it was a long time back.
I know more than you think I do.
Is that a fact?
You go ahead and take care of Reed and your horse. I'll tell you this much, Tyler Beaumont. He was never in a competition for you.
Morgan slowed Stormy to a trot about a quarter mile from the Monfort house. His gut told him to hurry, but his brain told him to take things slow and ease his way in. It wouldn't do Mercy any good if he rushed into her house and saved her from outlaws inside, while gunmen in the shadows killed them both. Frank vowed not to let anything like that happen again. The streets were dim and deserted, with most of the town folks inside eating an honest supper. Lights gleamed through windows up and down the street. In some of the houses, the curtains were drawn and only a sliver got through. Other places, people moved about inside their cozy homes, serving dinner, arguing, and otherwise carrying on family business, seemingly oblivious to the fact that anyone on the dark street could stand and watch their every move. Mercy lived on the southwest side of town, the area where the well-to-do landed gentry had decided to build their fancy two- and three-story homes. It was only proper that a powerful judge should have an estate in such an area. Morgan had no doubt that he could have afforded to live in such a place. With the wealth he had socked away from his first wife, he could have easily bought any of the houses several times over. As well appointed as the houses were, with all their spacious rooms and sprawling porches, he couldn't help but feel hemmed in amid such crowded conditions. Each lot was no more than an acre, and although most places had several outbuildings, including a coach house, to a person used to the wide open expanses of prairie, the whole mess seemed crowded far too close together. The fact that Parker County, a place that used to be the jumping off point for the frontier, was now joining the ranks of all the crowded places to the east, gave Morgan a pang of sadness deep in his gut.
Hush, you!
Frank shook his head and looked down at Wolf.
I'd not live in a place where you couldn't howl a bit if you got it in your mind to sing.
Wolf cocked his ear and looked up. A moment later, Stormy stopped in his tracks. He gave a low snort, both ears pinned back. Wolf looked off into a dark alley across the street. Morgan froze in the saddle. He strained his senses to try and figure out what his animals had noticed. Their instincts had saved his life on more than one occasion. Suddenly, Wolf tore off in a barking frenzy toward the alley. Stormy continued to shuffle uneasily.
Let's go, boy. We got places to be. That dog is a fair hand at taking care of himself.
10 steps down the road, Stormy stopped again. A shiver went up Morgan's spine as he saw the thin gleam of a lariat rope stretched out, head high, across the street in front of him. He gave his horse a pat on the neck. Someone was in the shadows. He could feel them.
Step down.
Frank raised his hand slightly and took stock of his situation. He'd already tucked his jacket behind his pistol so he could get to it fast if he needed to, but his target was in the shadows. Wolf had gone off to take care of something or someone across the street, and there could be more than one hiding on this side.
I told you to step down.
Glad to, friend. I just don't want to get shot in the process.
I'll shoot you when it's time, and not before. Now clamber down off that horse.
All right, then. I just wanted to get the shooting thing settled.
Frank stood in the stirrups and put his left hand on the saddle horn, preparing to dismount.
You better slow it down, mister, or I'll blow you from here to Jehoshaphat.
Morgan climbed down slowly, keeping the Appaloosa between him and the shadowed gunman. There was a good moon, and Frank knew he was an easy target in the middle of the street.
Don't think you're hiding from me behind that big spotted horse of yours. I'll easily shoot your legs out from under you, kill him, then come back and finish you off.
Kinda figured that's what you aim to do anyhow.
Wolf barked and snarled in the alley across the street. He was having troubles of his own.
Not unless you make me. I got other plans for you.
Morgan gave Stormy a swat on the rump, so he stepped past the neckline stretched across the street. The voice was right. If he was going to shoot, he would have done it already.
I'm getting mighty tired of talking to someone who won't come out in the light and show himself. If you're not planning to kill me, then let's get on with whatever it is you got in mind.
Morgan's hand hovered above his pistol. His eyes sought any movement in the shadows.
You got an awful big yap for someone who's about to meet his maker.
So, you do plan to gun me down in the street, then?
Oh, you're gonna die, all right. But I won't gun you down like a dog, unless you make me. Anybody could do that. It'll be a fair fight, man to man.
Come on out and let's get at it, then. I got no stomach for cowards who hide in the dark.
There was movement in the shadows, a rustling of leaves and shuffling of heavy branches. Mercy's house was less than 4 blocks away. Frank could feel it in his bones. She was in grave danger. He didn't have time for this foolishness. Mercy dipped her pen in the marble inkwell on her polished cherry wood desk and held it poised over a clean sheet of paper. She thought writing a short letter to her cousin in Georgia might help her take her mind off things, but she found she couldn't concentrate long enough to think of even one word. A drip of ink fell from the pen in her trembling hands, like a black tear. It splattered against the stark whiteness of the paper. This was her third attempt. Crumpling the paper, she dropped it in the wicker basket at her feet and gave up. Any other time, she would have cooked to calm her nerves. Isaiah loved to eat, and she loved to cook for him. Now, with him gone, she didn't know what to do with herself. Frank would get him back if anyone could, but even he might not be able to. Sometimes things just happened, and there was no stopping them. Mercy, of all people, knew the truth in that. She worried for the safety of her husband. She worried for Victoria. And she worried about the way she felt about Frank Morgan. She could vividly recall the day Frank had fought Orville Muncy when he had called her names. Though Muncy stood a head taller, Frank was not the type to abide such conduct, even at the age of 10. He'd climbed on top of the larger boy and given him the thrashing of his life, bloodying his nose and boxing his ears until Orville pleaded for him to stop. The violence of it all had frightened her so much back then that Mercy had hardly been able to speak. But she knew from that day on she would love Frank Morgan for the rest of her life. She loved her husband and wanted him home more than anything. But even that couldn't dispel the feelings she would always harbor for the handsome drifter. The bird dog, stretched out on a blanket in front of the fire, groaned against the white linen bandage that encircled his belly. He looked up at Mercy with pitiful brown eyes and whined as if to ask when his master was coming home.
It's all right, Gallows. He'll be all right, I think.
Who's there?
It's Ronald Purnell, Mrs. Mumford. I need to speak with you. It's about the judge.
She'd met Purnell. He was a lawyer in town who practiced in her husband's court. Peeking out the window to make certain he was alone, she turned the bolt and let him in. The lawyer rushed past her as if he was running from something, barely giving her a quick nod. Inside, he wrung his hands and chewed on his bottom lip. He was dressed in riding clothes, a fact Mercy found curious. She'd never even seen the man on a horse. She knew her husband had little respect for his ability as a lawyer, and she'd always found Purnell a little odd.
What can I do for you, Mr. Purnell? You say you have information about my husband?
The lawyer paced back and forth, clutching and tugging at the mousy brown hat in both hands behind his back. Gallows lifted his head from his spot in front of the fireplace and sniffed the air. He sprang to his feet and broke into a fit of snarls and growls when he saw Purnell.
Calm down, Gallows. Get into the other room.
I don't know any other way to say this, so I'll just say it right out. I know where your husband is.
Where? Who has him?
Ma'am, it's not as simple as all that. If I could just have your word that you would cooperate, no one else has to get hurt.
Where is my husband? Is he hurt? Mr. Purnell, if you had something to do with this, I would...
Oh, he has plenty to do with it. He's in this clean up to his nose hairs, ain't you, Purnell?
A dirty man with a lolling head and drooling mouth came in and grinned at her. She recognized him as one of the Crowder brothers. A huge oaf with greasy blonde hair down to his massive shoulders followed him in.
He's in the middle of it, all right. He just can't get to the point.
In the middle of what? Mr. Purnell, what is he talking about?
She's finer than you said she was.
The greasy-haired giant licked his lips and looked through half-shut eyes at Mercy, the way a starving man looked at a cooking piece of meat.
So help me. My husband will see you all hang for this.
Listen to me, lady. Last time I saw your husband, he was bleeding out his ears. I don't reckon he's gonna see us do a damn thing except put a bullet in his head. Not a damn thing. Comprende? Now, you need to put on some riding clothes, because we're going on a little trip.
That's a good idea. Have her put on some riding clothes.
Where? What kind of trip?
To see your husband, little lady. My pa seems to think you'll be able to convince the old fool to let my brother out of jail. Now, I ain't the brightest star in the sky, but even I know that ain't likely. Still, I gotta do what my pa says, or there'll be hell to pay. Comprende?
Very well. I'll go put on a skirt.
I'll help you get changed, pretty lady.
Oh, hang on there, you old dog. Your pa didn't say nothing about taking advantage of the lady. I'm the onlyest thing keeping this glued off you, so you better treat me with some respect. Comprende?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't see what he sees in you. You're old and wrinkled as a raisin. Old enough to be his ma, I reckon. Oh, what the hell? Go on ahead, Artie. Pa never said not to take advantage of her.
Now, wait a minute. What are you boys thinking? If you do this, there'll be no turning back. The judge won't listen to a word your father says, not if you harm his wife.
Oh, he ain't gonna listen to my pa anyhow. You know that and I know that. We passed the turning back point a long time ago. The old man just ain't owned up to it yet. Now, you shut your face before I shut it for you. R.D., you do what you gotta do and let's get on our way.
Listen, if your pa thinks you messed this up on account of going after the woman, there'll be hell to pay. He'll shoot someone, you know he will. If his plan doesn't work, you still have the woman.
Pony scratched his chest and sighed while he considered what Purnell had said. His head tipped to one side as if one ear weighed more than the other. Drool dripped from the corner of his sagging lips. Mercy closed her eyes. She didn't want to think that her immediate future was in the hands of a person as utterly vile as Pony Crowder. The voice of the other man was one Morgan had heard before. It was tight and had an edge to it. The man was stalling for time, waiting for something else to happen, some other part of a plan to fall in place.
I ain't no coward. A coward wouldn't be able to get the drop on the famous Frank Morgan.
Who says you got the drop on me?
Really funny, mister. You keep them hands up high, and I'll show you how much of a coward I am. No funny business now. I'm coming out.
Morgan let both arms rest across the crown of his hat. It kept them relaxed and would allow him to move with lightning speed. There was more shuffling in the shadows, and a dark figure stepped out into view. The long barrel of a shotgun caught the moonlight and appeared to glow. It was Tom Crowder.
Got ourselves a little furlough, did we?
Sheriff himself let me out. Told me it was all going to be worked out after tonight.
That right. What's happening tonight?
You would be interested in that, wouldn't you?
Listen, Tom, I got an important engagement. You want to fight me, then let's get it over with so I can be on my way. If you don't aim to fight me fair, then go ahead and take your shot now, because I'm getting mighty tired of hearing you yammer on. I warn you, though, you'd best make that first one count.
Crowder shot a quick glance up and down the street. The same hound dog howled again, and the boy looked away for an instant. Morgan counted to three while the dog continued its mournful song. He knew what would happen next.
Hush up!
When the woman yelled at the animal to quiet it, Tom looked away again, and Morgan shot him in the chest. The shotgun slid harmlessly from the boy's hands, and he dropped to his knees in the moonlight. All hell broke loose up and down the street. Windows lit up as people peeked out from behind their curtains. Front doors yawned open, and dogs began to bark and howl in earnest.
What's going on out there?
A fat woman with a lantern was standing on her front porch two houses down. The moon was bright enough that she'd have been able to see if she hadn't had the lantern to blind her.
Texas Rangers. Had a little jailbreak, but everything's fine now. Please go back inside, ma'am.
Apparently satisfied, the woman took her lantern and waddled back inside, slamming the door behind her. Morgan knelt beside the dying boy.
Tell me what's happening tonight, Tom. Who's supposed to meet you here?
Ferg!
Slow down, son. Try to get a little breath. Were you on your way to the Montfort place?
Pony! And R.D. They're... now! Ah, oh, damn, Morgan! I think you killed me.
Mr. Morgan? Mr. Frank Morgan? It's me, Jasper. I work for Mr. Perkins.
Jasper, what are you doing out poking around in the night like this?
Mr. Perkins sent us to check in on you. I'm coming out. Don't shoot me.
Luke's baby-faced cowhand stepped timidly into the moonlight. He was wearing a gun on his hip, but his hands were up.
Mr. Perkins said he would have come his own self, but the missus is in the middle of having her baby.
Where's Chance? I never seen one of you without the other.
There was another bugger hiding in the dark over yonder in that alley. Chance gave him a conk on the back of the head when we came up. Looked like he was waiting to ambush you. Tough bird, though. When we heard the shot, we looked this way. When we turned back around, he was gone.
Go ahead and put your hands down, son. What did this other fella look like?
Well, he's a young feller, about my age. Had long, curly hair like a girl peeking out from under a fancy hat. Chance took off after him, but I thought I'd better come check on you after I heard the shot.
Morgan nodded and drew the razor-sharp skinning knife from his belt.
I think I know who it was. I've noticed him ghosting around behind me ever since I left Amarillo. Been wondering when he was going to get up the nerve to make a play. Some nerve ambushing me in the dark.
Frank cut the rope that was strung across the street and climbed back aboard Stormy, who waited patiently a few yards away.
You best go back and check on Chance. That man he's after is hell of a shot, and if he's cornered, it'll take a lot more than a clunk on the head to put him down. Can you shoot?
Yes, sir. Passable at it, if I do say so myself.
Good. This man's name is Chaz Ferguson, and he's every bit as fast as me. He's just a little short when it comes to courage. If you catch up to him, don't wait for him to draw. Shoot him where he stands, because he'd do the same to you, and that's certain. He showed us his true colors tonight.
Will do.
I'm much obliged to the both of you. I gotta check on Mrs. Monfer. You go look after your friend so I can thank him as well. You mind what I told you now? Shoot Mr. Ferguson where he stands.
Frank tied Stormy to a sycamore tree three houses down from the Monfort place.
When Wolf gets back, tell him I won't be long.
Frank crouched, drew his peacemaker, and moved up the street. All the curtains were drawn, but when he got closer, Morgan could hear voices inside. It was just as he'd feared. They'd beaten him here. He checked around back and counted four horses tied to the rail beside the coach house. If they planned to kidnap Mercy, that left three inside. Frank holstered his gun and took out the knife. He moved quietly in case they'd posted a guard. They had. In the shadows by the back door, Morgan caught a whiff of cigarette smoke on the evening breeze. He froze and watched a tiny orange ash glow as the guard inhaled. Morgan sank into the shadows by the corner of the coach house. He needed to get in the house quickly, but couldn't chance spooking the guard and alerting the others. Men on guard were usually jumpy, unable to work off any of their jitters like the ones actually pulling off the job. Morgan decided to play on the jumpiness. He took up a handful of stones and pitched one at the group of horses. He hit a big brown in the rump, but the horse seemed unbothered by it. He threw another, and the horse drew up a hind leg, kicking at the small annoyance. Another stone brought a knicker and some shuffling of hooves. He had the whole string spooked now. Frank continued to throw rocks at each of the horses until they milled back and forth and tugged at their tie ropes, stomping their feet in the gravel.
What's got into you, critters?
The guard walked to the horses and looked up and down the deserted alley. When he seemed convinced there was no one around, he petted the big brown on the neck. It was likely his horse.
You animals simmer down now. They'll be out in a minute, I'm thinking.
Frank moved up next to the house while the guard was busy with the horses. He met the surprised man head-on as he stepped back into shadows.
What in the heck?
Frank's sharp blade slid in and took the wind out of the sentry's pipes. Frank caught him as he slumped forward into the knife and lowered him silently to the ground. Wiping his blade clean on the front of his pants, Morgan twisted the kitchen doorknob and found it turned easily. He eased it open and stepped inside. Two gaslights burned along the wall, making the gleaming kitchen with its polished oak table look as bright as noonday. Frank took a moment to get his eyes used to the light.
Look at all this silver and all them fancy books.
Yeah, forget the fancy stuff. He's a damn filthy rich judge. There's bound to be a load of money around here somewhere. That's what I'm after.
Frank stood still, listening intently. He strained to hear Mercy's voice. It sounded like he'd arrived in the middle of a burglary. He didn't have time to wait around. Morgan kicked open the door that led into the living room and entered, pointing his peacemaker back and forth at the two startled burglars.
What the?
Hello, boys. I noticed all your horses were wearing the Flying C brand.
Where's Abe?
Oh, was that his name? He's not doing so good since I sent him to hell.
Are you Frank Morgan?
I am. And I need one of you to tell me where Mrs. Montfer is. And I should warn you, my patience ran out about an hour ago.
Mr. Morgan, I ain't no good at all with a gun.
Glad to hear it. Just makes my job easier.
The other man took a chance and made his play while his high-voiced friend was talking. It was a deadly mistake. Morgan's Colt barked twice as the outlaw tried to draw. The mortally wounded man fell back against the writing table, knocking off an inkwell before he crashed to the ground. Squeaky bent low, trying to make himself as small a target as possible. He'd kept his hands raised throughout the shooting. He was a coward, but at least he was alive, and Morgan needed him alive.
It's up to you now, mister. Where's Mrs. Montfer?
He'll kill me!
You ought to look at your options here.
I can't, Mr. Morgan. I ain't kidding you. Mr. Crowder's mean as the devil his own self. He'd kill me if I told you anything at all.
Frank didn't have time for this. He pressed the barrel against the trembling outlaw's pursed lips. The room began to smell like fresh urine.
That woman is very dear to me, and I aim to find out where she is, even if I have to kill you to do it. Now listen up. I'm gonna count to one, then I'm gonna blow your fool head off.
One? I don't have time to go any higher. Cottonwood Creek. Mr. Crowder has a line cabin there he uses to check on his stock. It's about 5 miles out near the Salt Hills. They took her there. I swear she was alive when she left here.
Cottonwood Creek.
Morgan prodded with the gun muzzle to be certain. Squeaky moved his head up and down quickly. His eyes were shut tight. A squinting grimace crossed his face as if he still expected to be shot. Morgan thought about it. He was sure this man would have been just as cruel to Mercy as the rest if given the chance. He brought the Colt down sharply on top of Squeaky's head, sending him to the floor in a rumpled pile. Morgan had hit him hard enough that the wound could have been fatal, but he couldn't let the outlaw go. If Squeaky died, that was his problem. Hoofbeats sounded outside in the darkness. Coach wheels crunched in the gravel.
Morgan?
Frank relaxed a notch when he heard Tyler Beaumont's familiar voice.
In here! She's gone!
The ranger came through the door with Victoria in his arms. Her face was bleeding and purple with bruises. A bare arm trailed from underneath Beaumont's jacket. Beaumont set her gently on the couch. She was fast asleep.
She'll be okay.
The Whitehead boy do this?
He did. But if you want a piece of him, you'll have to go over to the jail. Take a shovel if you go, because I poured what's left of him all over the floor in one of the cells. He may yet live to hang. I cheated the hangman on two others.
Many thanks, Tyler.
Jasper and Chance came clomping up the front steps a few minutes later. Jasper agreed to take charge of the unconscious outlaw, while Chance stood guard on Victoria while she slept. Morgan and Beaumont had serious business to attend to at Cottonwood Creek.